If you've recovered from COVID-19 or unknowingly been exposed to it, you may have antibodies that could help COVID-19 patients. Donate blood and receive testing for COVID-19 antibodies. Visit Vitalant.org today.
A different future starts with you. That's why GoDaddy does more than help you find a name. You can create, sell, and get found online, so any small business could be a driving force to create change or build an empire. We know old ideas aren't cutting it anymore, so we're calling for a new generation of thinking, your way of thinking. So whatever you have in mind that will help make a different future, find everything you need to get started at GoDaddy.com. Because the future isn't decided yet. It's up to us to make it happen. Start different at GoDaddy.com.
This is an ode to the glass noodle. You may be glass only in name, but our love for you is crystal clear in every Bibigo Korean dumpling. Your tantalizing texture tickles the taste buds. And while you are see-through, the world can't help but see you. The glass noodle, one of many obsessively crafted ingredients in every plump and juicy Korean dumpling from Bibigo. Go handcrafted. Go Bibigo. Authentic Korean dumplings now in the freezer aisle.
This is Podco Media Networks.
It's the Innovation Podcast with Mark Reed Edwards and Garnett Harriman. Let's start the show.
Hi, it's Mark. On this episode, we continue our chat with Jonathan Webb of AppHarvest. We learn about the technology that AppHarvest puts to work, how they turn to experts in the Netherlands, how AppHarvest is responding to the challenge presented to the Earth 30 years in the future. And Jonathan says there needs to be urgency around our food supply. Plus, Garnett makes a shameless plug. So let's have a listen. So what is the technology if a new employee comes in there? What are the various pieces of technology you use to grow?
Good question there. It's, I've tried to define it as we're an applied technology company that really this is a systems engineering approach. It's not any one sensor. It's not any one component. It's not any one design feature. It's the entire system. So with that, there's a lot of different aspects that have been broken down, and we've kind of cobbled together this entire system to try to build the most efficient and effective and sustainable way to do this. It's going to evolve, and 10 years from now, I'm sure we'll look back and go, here's what we'll be doing better. But for today, what we've done, one of the large features that we've designed and part of our defensibility is we thank our region itself, which is we had a record amount of rainfall in Kentucky last year. We're on track to break that record amount of rainfall this year. Where we see west of Colorado drying up, Colorado River, droughts in Arizona, California, Mexico. So part of the design, when you come up to this facility, we're building a 10-acre retention pond that can fit nearly 750 Olympic-sized swimming pools inside of it. And we're collecting the rainwater on our 60-acre roof. We're piping that water into the retention pond. And when the facility goes live, we'll be filtering the water, and it will go back into the facility, and we will run the facility completely on recycled rainwater. That's just one piece to the overall system, but a very, very big piece. And we think, again, a reason why we can build large-scale infrastructure in this region and for decades to come have a reliable water source and not have to rely on city or nearby water. Another piece to this, and we recently announced, is that this will be the largest LED installation. So I was with the CEO of the lighting company last week. I was in the Netherlands with Philips, and they have a new LED fixture coming out at the end of this year that we will be deploying into this greenhouse. So, LEDs, similar to what we saw in solar technology, the price of the LED fixture is dropping while you're getting more micromoles out of the unit. So we're seeing that rapid change happen with LEDs. It's at a good place today. LEDs are even going to be at a better place in 5 years. And so, I think what we'll end up seeing across North America is more LEDs being deployed where we're able to get a lot of micromoles with as little energy input as possible. But then beyond that, there's sensors throughout the greenhouse. And with software, we'll be able to monitor the climate on the outside while monitor the climate on the inside. And we put the plant at the center of the equation. What we're trying to solve for is how do we grow the most fruits and vegetables with the least amount of input? So hydroponically growing the tomatoes, putting water directly to the root putting nutrient directly to the root while also manipulating the environment on the inside to maximize the yield for the plant. So again, ventilation, the roof will automatically open up, let heat out when the greenhouse is getting too hot. If the greenhouse is cool, we're running a boiler where we're putting humidity into the greenhouse, heating up the greenhouse. So again, we're trying to naturally control the environment so that there's an optimal climate for the plant year round. And then again, some of the other pieces that we're looking to layer on top of this, and what we'll do over time, our focus right now is building the physical infrastructure. As robotics and as AI continue to progress, and they're rapidly moving in agriculture right now, you know, that's something we're looking at, which is, you know, introducing robotics into the greenhouse to help with some of the picking and pruning, and from an AI perspective, identification of pest or disease. So that right now is something we're starting to build the large scale facility, and then we're monitoring, you know, what technologies and what technology partners we want to work with to deploy some of the different systems that will help harvest our vegetables. But again, it's an overall systems engineering approach that's not really any one technology, and we're working with technology partners. So, you know, the difference between App Harvest and some of the other farming companies and ag tech companies that have approached this, we look at it as in the same, and I think my background from the solar world is part of what's helped provide our perspective on this, is if you were a solar developer, if you were building an energy farm, you weren't actually building the solar panel as well. And this industry has gotten a little muddy because there's folks taking venture money, which is the most expensive money in the world, to build physical infrastructure to farm. And so we didn't do it in the solar world. It was too different. If you were a developer, you were simply analyzing the industry, finding the most efficient and effective way to build a system, buying those products from the technology partners that were focused on investing in the technologies, and then deploying them. So our position at App Harvest is, you know, there's 10,000 companies in the Netherlands that support this industry. For us to think that we're going to put 150 engineers in a room and come up with, you know, better solutions than the 10,000 companies in the Netherlands is something that was really hard for us to wrap our head around. So we immediately elected, we're not going to try to outdo what's already done there. We think, again, our planet's in peril. We have to deploy technology at scale to solve not only our energy problems, but our food problems. And so for us, what we're doing is, you know, our staff is monitoring the technologies hitting the market. And I think because there's so many technologies coming at so many different angles, and it's moving so rapidly, part of what we're trying to do is really be at the forefront on just deploying the various technologies inside this facility. So, you know, the difference between the way we're doing it and some of the other ag tech companies that are building farms right now is that, you know, they're developing technologies in-house. They're deploying those technologies on their farm. And again, some of them are going to work, and they'll, I think the problem's big enough to where many people are going to take many approaches to go at this and solve for it. But for us, you know, what we did was pretty unique in the sense of this in this industry, whereas we took project capital, which is, you know, infrastructure type capital, to build infrastructure for our facility. And we didn't take VC money to do that. And we thought that was really important. And being able to go and look at the proven technologies that are operating in the Netherlands and deploy those here instead of trying to, you know, just build everything in-house was a critical piece to the way we were looking at this.
COVID-19 patients need your help.
If you've fully recovered from COVID-19
or unknowingly been exposed to it,
you may have the antibodies that could help COVID-19 patients recover.
Donate blood and receive testing for COVID-19 antibodies.
Visit Vitalant.org today to schedule an appointment to donate blood.
That's Vitalant.org. Help save lives and schedule your appointment at Vitalant.org.
You could help save lives.
Your technology strategy kind of brings to mind some of the problems I've been having with, you know, I've been watching this space for about 5-6 years. I'm a fan of like words, and I'm a fan of nomenclature for different businesses and technology. So here's what I've heard so far, right? Ag tech in urban areas, I keep hearing this phrase agritecture, which I think is a mashup of agriculture and architecture. But honestly, listening to your technology philosophy, I feel like we need a new piece of, you know, your systems approach. I feel like we need a new piece of nomenclature. And it reminds me of some things, sort of parallel developments happening in the cyber world. So one of the biggest areas of innovation now on a large scale is cyber infrastructure. And I keep thinking that what you're doing is more like agri-structure. You know, it's much more about like agricultural infrastructure. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, no, we all know the problem. I mean, the UN report came out recently, and actually the new UN ambassador is from Kentucky. So Kelly Craft, who recently got confirmed as the next UN ambassador, is from here. And I think some of her folks had reached out and were talking about our efforts here after that UN report came out. But we know the problem. The problem is we don't have enough resources. We don't have enough land. We don't have enough water to produce the food we need for a growing population to hit 2050. That's the problem. And I admire all the different approaches and all the different ways people are looking to attack that problem. We do think it's gotten fairly muddy in the way people are looking at this. And we've tried to simplify it. And yes, we do think this is a large infrastructure play. We think it's complicated and complex, but shouldn't be as complex as what we've made it. You know, those solutions are in the Netherlands. You know, as we've talked to lawmakers in DC and talked to anybody there that'll listen, you know, we've tried to say what was done under the last administration for the wind and solar industry that took that industry and just took off like wildfire was a 30% federal investment tax credit for wind and solar. So if you built a $10 million solar project, you got a 30% federal investment tax credit that would be $3 million that you could use to write off during your operations, which made that facility much more profitable. As a result, we saw energy infrastructure built all across this country overnight. Thousands of acres of solar, thousands of wind turbines deployed. Solar was nearly one of the number one job creators in the U.S. because of the construction jobs. And so I've been pushing for, and we've been pushing for, some type of federal investment tax credit around deploying precision or controlled environment ag technologies. Let the farmer figure it out. You know, get the technologist into the middle part of the country with the farmers instead of thinking that we're going to solve all these problems from two or three big cities in the U.S. when we don't really think that the future of farming is going to reside in one or two big cities on the coast. We would like to think it's going to be somewhere in the middle part of the country and probably somewhere where people are already farming. So for us, it is a large infrastructure play. It's how do we deploy technologies at scale, you know, build the infrastructure to modernize farming in the U.S. But yeah, when you go to the Netherlands and you walk the facilities, you see how far behind we are in the U.S. We are decades behind on what farming can be here. And, you know, our position is there's not a silver bullet. We're not going to just develop some technology in a laboratory in one big city that's going to solve all this. It's going to be a lot of different approaches. But again, how do we incentivize private capital to just dump into farming and modernize our system to be able to grow a whole lot more food with a whole lot less resources? But yeah, for us, it's an infrastructure play. The technologies are there on the market, and it's simply taking those technologies and applying them. And that's really been our approach here. And hopefully, you know, not just us, but many others will be doing this here in the U.S. over the coming years.
So, Jonathan, I want to make a shameless pitch for our holding company that owns this podcast. And I'm going to tell you something, listening to you speak as passionately and comprehensively as you have been about this space. There's a podcast with your name out there called The Future of Farming, and it's going to change a lot of minds and hearts if you end up doing it. Well, I'm going to go on record as a prediction, you know, so hopefully it's you who does it, but somebody's got to do it. You know, I feel like there's a lot of folks who are not necessarily farmers, right? Whether they're investors, whether they're scientists, whether they're entrepreneurs in the general sense, or whether they're just general interest, kind of like popular science type folks, you know what I mean? Who really need to hear the message that you're bringing to the forefront. That's my shameless pitch for.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And, you know, not all these conversations connect this way, and appreciate you saying that. But, you know, for us, there are many folks that have been working on this effort. And, you know, one of them Jeffrey Oben, the founder of ValueAct, came into Eastern Kentucky and was reviewing our plans with us. And a lot of people have taken passion in this. And I think for us around the table, we've been shocked at the lack of conversation of this is food. I mean, there's basic pillars to civilization. Energy, food are two critical components. There's been that national and global conversation on energy. There is not that conversation on food. The urgency needs to be there. We don't see it, and I am. I'm hopeful that this will become an elevated conversation over time. It affects every family every day. And so how do we kind of reignite a passion around food? And you see it in some of the urban centers, and obviously in the farm-to-table movement, you're seeing some traction, but it's a big problem with not nearly enough focus. And hopefully the sense of urgency will start to ratchet up. But thank you all for at least allowing me to kind of voice some of this here on this podcast and outline outline what we're doing here in Kentucky to play our small part in the overall effort.
Looking forward into the future for some of the things that you may be thinking about, you may be working on as far as growing the company over time. I was struck by your comment, and I hope I heard it correctly, about Jeff Bezos visiting your facility or something like this. I don't remember exactly what you said.
No, he was in Kentucky, met with our governor, and part of the sell with us is people don't need to listen to App Harvest or what we think about why this is one of the best places to build a logistical hub. And for us, an indoor sustainable food hub, Amazon selected their $1.5 billion Prime facility to be built in Northern Kentucky. So he was recently here on that effort where they're building their large major shipping hub. But it's something that it's right up the road and it's certainly on our radar where as you look at what's happened with retail, again, Sears was the number one retailer 20 years ago and now they're not even on the list and Amazon's at the top of the list. What's going to happen with groceries? Are people going to continue to go to a grocery store the way they do, or are we going to see more direct to consumer? So, part of being in this region, obviously a water-rich region, but a big piece of this is we can get to 70% of the U.S. in a day drive, and having those large logistic hubs here that are DHL, UPS, Amazon, it certainly makes for an interesting dynamic as the food system in America is reshaped. And as, not only disruption on the grower side, which is what we're doing, but actual disruption at the grocer side, for us being near these large logistic hubs is just something that's interesting and transpiring while we're out here building our indoor grow facilities.
So where I was going with my faulty Bezos recollection commentary about Bezos was this. I'm curious whether there are future versions of your infrastructure, let's call it smaller, more compartmentalized, more modular, that could play a role in future space tech. That's where I was going.
Oh, yes. No, absolutely. As we refine how to grow here with the various constraints that are hitting our planet, there's definitely going to be a lot of different applications on how this can be applied outside of here. So yes, the technologies that are being infused in controlled environment ag right now are certainly going to be critical for, I'm sure, similar systems are going to be used whenever folks are growing their fruits and vegetables up on Mars. They'll, hopefully technology will be rapidly moving here in the U.S. to some degree to make that possible. But the indoor aspects of growing and using a lot less water to grow a lot less food is something that is desperately needed here in the U.S. And it'll be something that can transcend out from here for sure.
Well, Jonathan, it was great hearing the App Harvest story, and we wish you best of luck and hope to have you back again, because this seems like something over the course of the next months and years will develop fast, and we can't wait to hear that story too.
Absolutely. We need to keep track of the App Harvest.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining Garnett and Mark on the Innovation Podcast. Visit theinnovationpodcast.co to subscribe and listen to other episodes.
You stay home for the greater good. Secondhand smoke doesn't. It drifts through cracks in walls, air vents, and sink drains, spreading toxic chemicals that can damage lungs. Secondhand vape also puts your lungs at risk.
even with the fruity smells. Protect yourself and the people around you from these secondhand dangers. Learn how at tobaccofreeca.com.